Welcome back to the Killer Frogs live here at the Poop Deck. This is, thank you. I want to thank everybody who joined us tonight here at the Poop Deck. Of course, you can catch us live every week on Thursday between 6 and 7 o'clock, right off of Blue Bonnet Circle, right next to the campus at TCU. So, to get us started, my name is Sean Fouché. To my left is TCU Hall of Famer Shannon Brazil. How you doing, Shannon?
I'm doing great. What's up, everybody? The crowd is growing. Excited to be here. Let's get it.
It's going to be a good one. To my right is former TCU player Nathan Hernandez. How you doing, Nathan?
I'm slightly in mourning because of Trayvon Diggs, but it's fine.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. Yeah, so.
He tore his injured, ACL if you didn't know.
Yeah, injured during practice today, so. We'll soldier on. So we're going to start off this week's podcast with a special guest. And, one of the things that we're really excited about this season is all the new teams that are actually joining us in the Big 12, one of which we just got done playing in the University of Houston. And to my right, our special guest this week actually played back during the Southwest Conference days in the late 80s. I want to introduce everybody here to Chuck Mooney. How you doing, Chuck?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Hello.
He's got a fan club. Chuck, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. So, one of the things we wanted to talk to you about is a lot of the TCU fans that have kind of started following TCU, obviously, were not necessarily remembering the Southwest Conference days. You know, they weren't back in the 80s and the 90s. A lot of these guys came up in the late 90s and the 2000s when TCU was kind of wandering the desert, so to speak. Tell us a little bit about your time playing in the Southwest Conference, and are you excited to have a team like Houston back in the conference with TCU?
Yeah, I'm really excited because it does bring back a lot of memories. I have the distinction of saying that I'm old enough that I played in a conference that most people have never even heard of and didn't know ever even existed. But the Southwest Conference was a really, really big deal for a long, long time. And when I was graduating from high school in 1986, you did not have to go outside of the Southwest Conference to really achieve all of the, you know, all of your athletic dreams that you wanted to. It's really fun to reignite some of those old rivalries and kind of get some of the old neighbors back.
Well, you made a good point too, because growing back up in the 80s, Southwest Conference is certainly here in North Texas. That's all anybody ever talked about, and It's such a weird dynamic when you kind of talk to students today, and you talk to some of these college students that are going to TCU right now, and they, this perception is more of a nationwide kind of a perception when it comes to college football rather than a more regional one like we had back in the late 80s and the 90s.
Right. I mean, it's one of 100 things that have changed drastically since I played. I'll use my kids as a perfect example. My children would say, wow, you mean you used to play A&M every year, or you used to play Arkansas every year? Yeah, we did. We absolutely did. And a lot of other good schools as well.
Well, including SMU, who the Frogs face off this week. Mm-hmm. And finally kind of found themselves, well, we can talk about how this happened, a seat at the big table again starting next year in the ACC. But back in the 80s, obviously you had, when you mentioned a lot of things have changed, back in the 80s, SMU was bit before the pre-NIL days by paying players, and they had the death penalty. How do you feel about kind of the change to college football since when you played?
Without trying to sound like, just an old guy, it's taking some time to get adjusted to the newness of it. I, along with a guy in the crowd there, Mike Sullivan, we were in the same class together at TCU, and we came in right as TCU was being put on probation, and we got hit in the back of the head with a 2x4 for doing the exact same stuff, maybe even just a fraction of the stuff that is now open and legal and praised today. So that has taken some getting used to. We played with that flying T logo on the side of our helmet, and it's back. I mean, it's back in some places that it's, you know, it's taken me personally. I'm making some adjustments. I'm saying, okay, yeah, the flying tee now means something different than it meant back when I was in school.
So what do you mean by that? What did it mean when you were back in the school? How did you guys view the flying tee?
You know, I looked at the flying tee at the time. You know, we played for a guy named Jim Wacker. And Jim Wacker was an upstanding citizen. I mean, he was just a really, really good human being who played in he worked in a really, really difficult profession. And he made some really, really difficult decisions that some could say cost TCU, but I don't think he would have had it any other way. He was practicing what he had preached all along. And so me playing with the flying tee on my helmet, I just felt like, you know what, this is a sign for the world to see that we're doing things the right way. And it might take us a little longer, and we might have to work a little harder, but we're going to get to where we want to go with that, doing it the right way.
Yeah, that's a very interesting way of actually putting it, right? So you're right. For those, you know, maybe who are listening to the podcast later on, who don't really know what Coach Wacker actually did when he was here at TCU, he actually self-reported to the NCAA of the violations that he uncovered.
The last one to ever do that.
Right, yeah. The last coach across the nation to ever really do that, right? And it really was. So from your perspective, the flying tee is a symbol of that sort of moral principle standing that TCU took in the 80s.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was something like when we would go home at Christmas, let's say. I went to high school in Houston, and there were a couple social gathering spots on Westheimer where a lot of Southwest Conference players from different schools would gather. And, you know, you'd have your guys from the teams that were more successful at the time. They were there kind of holding court. But when a TCU guy walked up, there was always a place at the table for a TCU guy, just simply because they had our respect. They knew what we were up against. They knew that in the years following, you know, Mike and I, our recruiting class was the last full recruiting class. We had 23 guys in our class, all of whom graduated, by the way. Shout out to the 100% Club. Last time that'll ever happen in college football. But the class following mine had 10 scholarships, and then the class after that one, if memory serves, maybe it was 15. So that is really, really difficult to compete when you're already working your way up anyway, and then they tie one hand behind your back and tell you to go out and fight like that.
Yeah.
But we just kept doing it. And we kept trying and kept trying and kept trying, and that earns respect, and that always granted us that place at that table.
Well, and it certainly earned respect among the fans, and I think that was something that a lot of TCU fans kind of hanged their hat on for many years, especially after the Southwest Conference was dissolved and TCU kind of had to hop conferences for all those years. We felt, and Shannon, you can chime in here, we felt that when Coach Patterson came in, again, it was that same kind of respect. It was that same kind of moral principle standing that he was trying to instill in his players, right?
Well, I'm glad you said that, because that lets me know that's been going on way before our time. Mm-hmm. I ain't going to say way before, because we're not that far apart.
It's way.
But it's
you can say way.
Okay, way. But it's that we've always fought with that. We've always had that in every locker room. I'm sure Nathan could say the same. We've always had to earn respect. And to this day, we still kind of got to do that. It's just nobody believes in even though the little engine that could, has already said we've done, it's always come back to, you know, put us in a place where we got to keep proving, which I don't mind proving people wrong. I have no problem with it as a football organization, as a fan, as an alumni. I love it. So that's good to know. But my question to you is, after the 2 years, were you on probation? You said your first 2 years, you guys, as freshmen?
Yes.
Who was the top dog back then? Because I believe it was Arkansas. I think it was Arkansas, because I came to TCU because of the education, and I wanted to play in the Southwest Conference, which they broke it up right before I got here. So it sucked, right? I got to watch I came in the spring. I saw them play in Oklahoma.
Okay.
Before, and we won. And that was the last group, you know, the last year we got to play.
Mm-hmm.
And so, which would be my my senior group because I came in the spring. But anyway, who was a big dog and who got the best of who in the Southwest Conference back in your 4 years?
You know, at the time, it would be no surprise to you that Arkansas was always up there. Texas was always up there. A&M was getting up there. It was kind of the early days of the Wrecking Crew. And, you know, sometimes when you're the smaller underprivileged with the one hand tied behind your back, we would play the heck out of them for as long as we possibly could. Oftentimes, it was neck and neck for three quarters. And then the lack of depth would catch up, and, you know, the floodgates would kind of open up. However, to this day, I still get goosebumps thinking about my senior year when we went up to Arkansas, and they had no idea what hit them after the game was over. We beat Arkansas at their place, 54-26. The fans had the courtesy of not chunking any empty Jack Daniels bottles at you on the sidelines. I'd never seen so many just flummoxed faces in my whole life. Those people were, they couldn't believe what we had just done to them. And some guys had some career night games up there that night. It was really a lot of fun. And it was a special game. It was nice to get one on them before graduating.
That's awesome. A lot of people don't remember, or at least, Nate, do you remember the Southwest Conference?
So he was born in 95, so that would be a no.
It was the Razorbacks in Texas in the Cotton Bowl back then. It wasn't Oklahoma at the time, but it was actually, because I was, as a matter of fact, I went to the game being recruited, and that was the rivalry back in the day. So just want to throw that out there for my man who probably didn't know that.
Well, if you guys ever want to dig into some really good history, not to hijack your show, but...
No, hijack away.
It's her show.
Pull up... pull up old articles by a TCU hero named Dan Jenkins.
Oh, yeah.
Dan Jenkins was the voice of the Southwest Conference. Well, Kern Tips was the voice on the radio, but Dan Jenkins was the scribe of the Southwest Conference. And if you'll Google names like Lindy Berry... Lindy Berry was possibly the greatest skill player in the country, but the only one they heard about was down the road, Doak Walker at SMU. And in the 3 years that those two played against each other, Lindy never lost a game. They tied twice, and Lindy beat him once. And so the fact that that skillet game is going away, somewhere Dan Jenkins is shedding a tear. But if you ever want to learn about the Southwest Conference, just pull up anything written by Dan Jenkins from back in that day, and you'll learn a lot.
Dan was absolutely a master of his craft and an unbelievable historian as well. I mean, I think it's one of the things it's one of the things a lot of people don't realize. They look at him as a journalist. They look at him as somebody who just wrote stories, but he was really vested in the history of what he was actually writing, and I think that's what really kind of came across and what made it really special when you read his articles. It's interesting, you brought up the skillet game, and this is the second-to-last skillet game. Next year is the last one. How do you feel about that?
I from a nostalgic standpoint, I hate to see it go, but I hate to see a lot of things going that are going in college football right now. Anytime you do the same thing 100 years and then you stop, it's just kind of weird, but I understand why things are happening. But the last time they came here, our coach was their coach, and if I remember correctly, they planted a flag at our midfield, and there's only one way to send them out on Saturday. You've got to properly wrap that 100-year tradition up in a bow and kick them right out the door.
Amen.
Well, I will tell you this. Whoever came up with planting the flag in the middle of our field, it's not so clever. That wasn't clever. What was clever?
Oh, I know where we're going.
That was clever.
I know this story.
I'll give it to you. You're
that
right.
That was a good one.
Yes,
that's still one of the top. I had to clap my hands for that one. The band, they were clever.
Tell the people what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about, but tell them. I don't want you to retell the story, but just for the sake of the podcast, you have to retell the story.
Well, I wish there was a camera because I'd show you.
There's a big old SMU.
He brought visual aids. Goodness gracious.
It's an M. Well, the band dropped. What kind of seats were they?
It was ryegrass.
Ryegrass, yeah.
In the middle of our field, and an M grew in the middle of our field. And we thought that was clever because nobody saw him do it until it was there.
It was smart kid humor. I respect smart kid humor.
That's it. Brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
I
admit, yes, it was brilliant.
It was there during recruiting. There was just no was getting there, rid of
it.
That stuff.
It wasn't. Right. They literally had to pull
they
that almost one blade at a time to get it out of there. It was that was good. Vandalism, but it was good. Anyway, so yeah, the loss of the Skillet game. I know the fan base kind of split on it. A lot of people, like you mentioned, when you have a 100-year tradition like that, it's kind of hard to let it go. But as you also mentioned, a lot of things have changed in college football over the years. And I want to go back to what you mentioned about the flying tee, because I didn't think about it from this perspective with players from your era at TCU. You guys were playing under a symbol that you felt kind of epitomized the moral standing of TCU. Fast forward to today, and that symbol, which, you know, was kind of locked away in the, you know, quote, TCU vault, you know, mm-hmm. kind of like a parallel to the Disney vault with what they do with a lot of their movies. And suddenly now it's being used to prop up the biggest NIL group for TCU. How does that adjustment work for you?
I'll just sum it up, and it's a sensitive subject and I want to be respectful, but I'll sum it up with one word. I find it to be ironic. It's just ironic. We labored under restrictions that are now celebrated. So it's an adjustment for some of us who were there at the time of the probation era.
Well, I hadn't thought of it that way, and I thought that was it was very poignant the way that you kind of pointed that out, that the way that you guys actually viewed the flying tee. So I hope at some point in time we can kind of get back and kind of wrestle that imagery back and kind of put it back where it belongs historically mm-hmm. among the players that played under that banner. And I know that some other players that we've known along the way, Scott Nix, for instance, mm-hmm. who you know.
Oh, yeah.
Felt the same way about the flying tee. He was very adamant that he felt, even though a lot of TCU fans kind of look at that and go like, it was when we were the worst. We lost a lot of games under it. Why do we want to bring
it
back?
Those are fighting words.
And I be honest with you, Scott never explained it to me that way. But the way that he did used to talk about it, now that you explained it, makes a whole lot of sense. So tell us a little bit about how you knew Scott Nix.
Well, I met Scotty my freshman year because one of my classmates, one of our teammates, was his youngest brother, Preston Nix, who might have been, Preston might be goofier than Scotty was. And
no comment.
Preston let us know right away that his biggest brother had a yogurt shop over on, it was over on Barry. And so we made a trip early on. I think it was during like freshman two-a-days when we had a break. We went over and met Scotty. And I mean, I could go a year and not see Scotty. And if I bumped into him somewhere, he'd give you that big bear hug. And I always wanted to see Scotty when I was around a lot of my people because he'd make you feel like you were a superstar, like VIP treatment. And my friends would always say, "God, who is that guy? I mean, who are you? I mean, are you some sort of big deal?" But he made you feel that way, for sure.
Yeah, he did. Well, we really appreciate you coming on with us this week, and we definitely want to have you back because as we kind of go through this season, we'd love to hear some more stories of back in those particular days of TCU because I think they're really important. You mentioned Dan Jenkins. I think the history of TCU is something that is worth preserving, and it's worth telling because a lot of the students these days, a lot of college football doesn't understand the historical significance that TCU has on this game, going all the way back to, you know, 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our school has done so much for the game of football, and as Shannon pointed out, unfortunately, we don't get the respect that we technically deserve. And I think it starts with what you guys did back in the 80s. I think that is so important to the story of the modern day TCU football team that I think it's well worth telling the story.
I think we like to think of it that way. If you look at a house, you can't see the foundation. You can just see the beautiful bricks and mortar above the surface. And I think the guys who were back there in the 80s, we think of ourselves as part of that foundation. And you might not be able to see us, but we were really, really important to the stability of that house.
Amen. Well, Chuck, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, you know, we are back this week after a TCU victory down in Houston. But before we actually talk about that, let's kind of shift focus just a little bit and let's bring in Barry here. Fan Nation, Barry, tell us a little bit more about what's going on with some of the other sports at TCU. I think you got an update for us with soccer and volleyball.
Sure. So soccer last week played their first conference game at number one in the nation, BYU, came away with a draw. So that was a good start.
Excellent.
Right, and then they got a win over Stephen F. Austin over the weekend, and tonight they're playing another conference game, probably right about now, in Cincinnati. So they are on the outside looking in on the polls, but maybe soon they'll start getting back into the polls. So.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised they didn't kind of creep in there at the end of the week, but yeah, they're on the right trajectory.
They've been in, they've been out, they've been in, they've been out, so it's time to go back in. So,
absolutely. All right. So also, we've got equestrian starting up soon. Is that right?
Equestrian starts tomorrow. To start their season. The preseason poll came out for the second straight year. TCU is ranked number 3 in the preseason poll, and for the 11th straight year in the top 10 to start the season.
That's fantastic.
And so, not going to be an easy start for them tomorrow. They host cross-metroplex rival SMU, just in, obviously because it's Iron Skillet week, so why not do it equestrian as well? And SMU is the defending national champion, ranked number 1 right now. So, tough start to the season.
A tough start, but I think they can handle it.
Yep, exactly.
So, one of the questions we typically get is, you know, how do you guys cover all these Big 12 football teams?
Sure. So, our goal here at Fan Nation is to not just talk about TCU sports, TCU football, but also let everybody know what's happening with all the other Big 12 teams. We have a series of stories that we publish every week. We've got one on Sunday that's going to recap all of the Big 12 scores. We've got one that comes out by our writer, JD, every Wednesday, and he looks at the slate of the games for that weekend and ranks all of the Big 12 teams based on what ones you should watch and which ones you don't have to worry about. This week, he's got UCF at Kansas State as the must-watch game.
I'm just curious, where does he have Iowa State or Oklahoma State?
He said not even worth watching that one. He said if you want to yawn, that's it. And then on that same note, we have a writer, Davis, who's going to expand upon that. And on Fridays, he publishes the Big 12 game of the week and goes into more detail looking at actual the players on both and what to expect. And I haven't heard what his game's going to be. I'm going to assume it's probably going to be UCF Kansas State, but he could pick something different tomorrow. So,
well, that's great. And one of the other things is this got started when we actually began the Fan Nation was the power ranking system is right.
Correct.
And then, and a lot of people have been following this power ranking and it's starting to expand now.
Yeah. So we're doing something very unique with power rankings. A lot of people will go out there and every week rate the teams. West Virginia does one, Kansas does one, Texas does it occasionally, and those are just Fan Nation sites. Other sites will do it as well. They're all very subjective, and it's usually one person that's picking them. We're doing it differently. This year we have 44 people participating in our weekly power rankings voting. And what we've done is we have our entire Fan Nation staff, so there's 13 of us. Yes, we all write for Killer Frogs, but not all of us are TCU students. Not all of us are TCU alum. We have one that's a student at Missouri. We have a guy that lives in Cleveland, has no connection to TCU. We have another guy that's a Wisconsin alum that lives in Chicago. Again, no connection to TCU. So it's not just being TCU homers in those that 13. But what I'm really proud of is we have one or two fans from every other Big 12 school participating in our rankings. Most of the schools we have two. There's just like three, I think, that we only have one representative. We had a core group, obviously, when we had 10 teams in the league, and I had a core group of people that did this. But over the summer, we had to go out and find people from Cincinnati, UCF, BYU, and Houston. And then come August, we had to find four more teams, and we went ahead and thought, do we go ahead and bring in the Colorado, Arizona, Arizona State, Utah now, or wait till next year? But they're going to be paying attention to what's happening in the Big 12 anyway, so we brought them in as well. So we've got all eight of those teams covered in our power rankings to get us to the 44 people each week.
That is fantastic. And we've been following those power rankings throughout the season, and they're fantastic to watch. And it's very insightful because you do kind of get that cross-section across the entire conference. So it's not just TCU. Like you said, right. It's not just TCU writers that are right. doing it. It's not just TCU fans. It really is a nice sampling of yeah. what you would expect out of the Big 12.
Yeah. And we'll do it again come basketball season and do it again come baseball season. So.
Well, fantastic. Well, we appreciate it. Thank you, Barry Lewis, Absolutely. For the update on Fan Nation.
Absolutely.
All right. So Chuck's back for another segment. We're going to really quick, we're going to kind of run through some of these games. I just want to get everybody's opinion here at the table about some of the games that happened this past week. And we'll start off with the toaster in the bathtub game. OSU losing to South Alabama, 33-7. That's South Alabama, not Alabama. Shannon, what is this spell for Oklahoma State?
Trouble.
Very succinct.
Just like the mullet, trouble.
Yeah.
Listen, I keep saying it, you know, with the portal and everything going on. You got to be able to utilize it. I don't know if what's going on in Oklahoma, but they're usually a better team than that. And this is the first year in the last 4 years I personally don't worry about them. Last year when they first got going, I was worried about them. Not so much this year.
Definitely.
I mean, they're not the same team whatsoever. I don't know how many they lost. I don't know that you hadn't studied them or anything like that, but I know they usually come out the first week and put a better product on the table. They put trash on the table this past weekend, so I don't know. It's going to be a long season for those guys.
It really is. And, Nathan, do you think Gundy's lost the locker room there? Do you think that's a problem?
I think Gundy's lost the fan base. I think honestly, he's getting very close to a position that Coach P was in right before he left.
Yeah, it was a few years ago.
Yeah, I think he's definitely on the hot seat. Like, it's South Alabama. Like,
yeah.
I was literally talking. One of my clients that I train is an Oklahoma State grad, and we were talking about it. I was like, oh, how do you think you're going to do this week? He's like, I mean, it's South Alabama. If we don't win that game, I mean, but it's.
And I would have loved to have heard how he would have finished that sentence.
I immediately felt bad for him. I was like, oh, it's South Alabama. I just think they have a quarterback problem. And if Gundy doesn't get something figured out, I don't know if he lasts much longer. I love Gundy. Like, I think he has done a lot for that program, but. Same thing with Coach P. You've got to adapt, change.
But he's in the same exact position pretty much as Coach P. He's taken him as far as he can take him, and it's probably time for somebody else to take him to the next level. And so I think his time is definitely, after this year, being 500, he won't be there.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, too, because just like with Coach P, Gundy has become kind of a legend in that particular program, and he's done an amazing job, and I like him, too. I mean, when we go to Big 12 Media Days, he's easily the most fun interview, especially when you get him riled up about Oklahoma leaving the conference. But, you know, or talk about hairstyles, you know, one of the two. But overall, I kind of agree with you, Shannon. I think it's one of those cases where I hate to say the game has passed him by because it really hasn't. I mean, he really does a good job of coaching up those young men. But I think, again, Chuck, going back to what we were talking about previously, how many things have changed in college football. Some of these coaches that don't kind of adjust to that new level, second, third level of the game, the NIL, the transfer portal, they just don't get it.
I mean, that happens every decade. There's always some coaches that have been around at a program for a long time, and they just either don't adapt or things just catch up a little bit too much and people get impatient, and they're out. Like Les Mills at LSU, Coach P at TCU. I mean, eventually, if Saban doesn't
start. Mack
Brown at Texas. Right. Luckily for him, he's turned it around at UNC a little bit. But, yeah. I mean, even if Nick Saban doesn't do something soon, not that he's on the hot seat right now. He's going to probably be there for quite a few more years. But, I mean, they lose to Texas. They struggled against
I don't follow Alabama.
Someone they
football.
Shouldn't have struggled against. They won 17-3.
I know what you're talking about. They barely won.
Yes. USF. Come on.
South Florida.
Yeah. So if Saban doesn't turn it around soon in the next few years, he could be out. So
that goes for Clemson,
yeah,
too.
It's a little bizarre. Chuck, what about you? Did you get a chance to watch that game or any of the highlights?
Just highlights. And I think one thing that needs to be considered, we all look at the transfer portal and we think about what happens on the front end. If you consider a traditional recruiting class, it might have 25 people in it, 25 new recruits. Back in the day, that meant 25 top flight high school kids. Now that means maybe 10 top flight high school kids and 15 transfer portal kids.
Yeah.
So that means there are top flight high school kids all over the country who are not getting the invite to these top level D1 schools.
Yep.
So where are they going? I didn't get an offer to Alabama, so I'm going to go to South Alabama.
Yeah.
And that means those teams, those South Alabamas out there, they're going to be talent rich, and they're going to be much, much better than what they've been in the past.
Yeah, Appalachian State's another good example of that, mm-hmm, too, yeah. Right? Yeah. Well, there's a couple other losses, obviously. Cincinnati losing to Miami of Ohio. Iowa State losing the Puke Bowl to Ohio. Not Ohio State, not the Ohio State. Gosh, I hate saying that. But Ohio, 10-7. And if you didn't hear, they all got like food poisoning right before the game. I don't know what they were doing, but Iowa State. It's like, it's just bad all the way around. Kansas State loses on a last second 61-yard field goal to Missouri, which is really tough. And we got to see, a couple weeks ago, we got to see Kel hit that 57-yard field goal against Nicholls State, which was great. But that's a tough loss all the way around. But let's talk about two quick teams, just real fast, that did win. BYU beating Arkansas and West Virginia over Pitt. Shannon, I'm really happy between the two. Yes, nice. Thank you, BYU. Really appreciate you beating Arkansas. But West Virginia getting a win against Pitt, I think that's really helpful for them.
That's a strong win for West Virginia. But West Virginia, we know who they are. They're going to fight. They're going to claw. They're going to bite, whatever it takes. They're just hard to beat. Were they in West Virginia? I didn't see the game. I saw the highlights. But if they were, then you know what it is to play there. But that's a great win for those guys. Again, a team that I'm a little leery of because they can beat you. That's a team that can beat your butt any given Saturday, right? And BYU, they're just, BYU's solid. BYU's a disciplined team, and you're going to have to play your best ball to beat them every single weekend. So that's one of the teams I'm excited to have in the Big 12.
Yeah, and Chuck, Arkansas is not exactly the Arkansas of the Southwest Conference days, but BYU beating Arkansas is still a really big deal.
Yeah, it is a big deal. And when we were in school, we had a home-and-home with BYU, and it was a ferocious two-game matchup. In fact, we beat them here at Amon Carter in the cricket game, and Google that one sometimes.
Yeah, that was a famous night right there.
You'd be amazed where crickets can end up on your body or in your body after 60 minutes. It's a great story. You could do a podcast on that game by itself.
But I think we've got another episode later in the season then, already booked.
But BYU is always a team on a mission, and that's because most of them have come back from a 2 or 3 year mission. And so you've got guys, like full beards. They had Shannon beards.
Yeah.
Back when they were lined up across from you in school. But yeah, they're going to be a great addition and a very formidable foe for sure.
Well, and playing in Provo, as you know, is absolutely one of the most gorgeous settings for college football in the nation. So it's going to be exciting to actually have them in the conference again.
Well, it'll be a good road trip.
It is going to be a great road trip. And so, week three here in the Big 12, it's just really maddening to kind of see what's happening right now, but hopefully the conference kind of turns this around. But let's get into what TCU did in week three. coming off of a win against Nicholls State, which I don't think really answered a whole lot of questions for a lot of fans. But we go down to Houston, Houston's Big 12 opener, and TCU comes away with a victory 36-13. It's the first time TCU has faced off against Houston since the 2007 Texas Bowl, right? And since then, it was the last time was back in, what, 95 at the end of the Southwest Conference. So TCU has won now 9 straight against Houston. But now the question is, Nathan, you were there up in the press box. By the way, thank you for handling my duties while I wasn't able to go down to Houston on the weekend.
Of course.
I was absent last week because I had actually go down and visit my daughter, who's a freshman at Abilene Christian University. So, unfortunately, they lost by a touchdown to Incarnate Word. At least one team in purple won this weekend. But, Nathan, real quick, how did this game answer any questions for you?
Yes, it answered our road game question. You know, we can focus on the road, handle our business, at least from what I saw. You know, coming into the game, massive thunderstorm at 3 p.m. The team got it, flight got delayed, kind of already test you a little bit because those delays, they're annoying more than anything because it throws your whole momentum off of the game, throws your focus off because you don't know when you're gonna if there's going to be a delay to the game itself. So I think they did a good job of refocusing. Because, you know, Coach Kaz is going to be – he's and I was talking about this with a couple of the staff members, but Coach Kaz is good at getting those guys focused up until the game leading up to it. So I think they did a good job of handling that change of stress almost, just with the weather delays and all that. But just being able to go down, get a Big 12 win, that sets us up already for a positive season. Because, you know, after the Colorado loss, it's like, all right, now we already have one loss. Got to win the Big 12. One step closer now. Now we got to take another step after that, but first we got to take care of SMU. But I think that did a lot for me in terms of we handled the things that we should have handled, if that makes sense. You know, first drive of the game, go down, score. First drive of the second half, go down, score. So we can come out and start hot. We don't have to start slow every game like we have been known to do in the past. So that was actually a lot more reassuring than anything. But our defense came in clutch again. You know, we've only allowed one touchdown, no touchdowns in the last two games.
Last two games, no offensive touchdowns.
Yeah, no offensive touchdowns. So that answered
special
a lot.
Special teams is another thing.
Yeah, and their quarterback is good. He was a Texas Tech transfer. Dana played against him last year, and he beat Dana. So Dana brought him in to play us, or not play us, but play in the Big 12. And so we answered a lot of questions defensively, I think, in terms of being able to handle a mobile quarterback.
So, speaking of mobile quarterback, one thing I was happy to see as a change on offense was Morris actually using his legs more in this game. And how do you feel about the way that actually changed the dynamic of the offense?
So it's another person to account for. Someone on defense got to account for Chandler. If it's third down, Chandler can use his legs. Even if it's a longer one, you know, he has the ability to run. And he even talked about it after the game. He's getting more comfortable with his legs. He's gotten to that point where he can now add that to an asset of his game and as a weapon. Just because, you know, we're going to spread the ball around. And so that takes defenders out of the box, takes people out. And so if he can take his legs, now it takes someone out of the secondary to account for that. And now that leaves somebody open down the field or at the sticks, wherever it may be. So I think his legs add another weapon to our game.
Yeah, he continues to impress as he's getting better. And I think that's one of the things a lot of TCU fans kind of overlooked at the beginning of the season was that he just didn't have as many game reps as we were expecting him to have up to this point. Obviously getting injured in the first game against Colorado last season, which of course Max came in and the rest is history, as they say. But he does seem to be getting better by leaps and bounds on a week-by-week basis. So it's going to be interesting to see how he handles SMU this week.
Yeah, he talked about it after the game too, is that every time he comes off the field, whether we had a successful drive or have a failure drive, he's thinking about what I could have done differently. how I need to read something differently, what he did wrong. He's not pointing fingers. He's not blaming other receivers for not getting open. He's not blaming the O-line. He's thinking, all right, where do I need to go with this next time? And he's asking the coaches to help him, like, see it, because obviously he can't see everything. The coaches in the press box have the bird's-eye view that we talked about last week with Casey, but he's asking, he's trying to learn every single week. And so that's honestly very promising for me. I love to see that from him.
Yeah, a humble attitude like that out of your quarterback is always nice to hear. But, you know, talk about humbling performances. Shannon, let's get you in here. The defense. Nathan already kind of explained, you know, they have not given up a offensive touchdown in two games. Granted, Nickel State, Houston, I get it, right? But are you happy with the performance of this defense in the last 2 weeks, or at least the progress that the defense is making?
This is what I'll say. If we're going to hold, and I'm wearing the, I'm going to try not to be biased. I'm going to try to be fair, right? I'm a Frog through and through, but I can be honest in front of Frogs, right?
Well, you did spend some time at SMU on a visit recently, so.
Hey, put it like this. I didn't pay for anything. So it was on their dime. So, you know, that count.
That counts.
All right. If we're going to say that we are now a new TCU football team, and we have depth. We have all the tools that it takes. Like, let's take last year, for example. We've, as an institution, have been trying to get to that level for a long time, right? So what we can't do is, when we see a team that go to a national championship, and I'm not talking about what happened there. We got there fighting. We got there. People forget we beat Michigan to get there. So that's one thing. But we did that with depth. We did that with coach. We did that with everything that we said we needed to be to get there. And after a season, I expect us to be clicking on a higher level, because they say we have depth. We have it. Now, if we don't have depth anymore and we're just that team that has a good starting group, I'll go back to judging them off that. But what we can't do is say now we have depth. Now we have everything we want in a football team to take us to the promised land, and we start off like this. I'm not saying it's bad. We're getting better. They gave up only 41 yards rushing. But, again, look at who we're playing. Let's say we start out the gate, and I don't even credit Colorado, because that was, to me, was like a circus to me. That was different. But as we get going here, and we're getting better each week. I get it. But I expect us to be a lot better. I don't expect us to drop off that dramatically after 12 draft picks or whatever the case may be, because we supposedly have depth. We're supposed to be a deep team. So I expect those guys to step up and play now. So as we get hurt or things happen, we've got to step up and not miss a beat. That's supposed to be where we are. But if we're not there yet, then I'll take this week and we can say, yeah, we're playing great, because this is how we used to play.
Yeah, so then basically what you're saying is that you wanted to see this defense coming out firing on all cylinders.
Yes.
Starting on week one.
Yes.
And they didn't.
They did not.
Okay, so given that fact, and I agree with you, I think all of us were a little bit disappointed with the way that the defense was handled in week one and a little bit in week two. And they did tighten up the tackling a little bit in week two. Week three, there's still a couple of missed tackles, obviously not as many as week one. So there is a slight progression. But are you feeling like it's a slow acceleration at this point, or do you feel like we're making strides?
We're making strides. Listen, and again, we're getting better. But I just feel like we have some games coming up. We've got some dogs coming here. Obviously, SMU's going to play us. They're going to play us tough. We'll see.
They always do.
They always do.
Super Bowl,
that's going to be,
right?
One of those games that we can leave happy, or we're going to just leave pissed off because we just didn't play our best ball, even with a win. And we should be able to handle teams like that. We just need to be at the level where some of our components, our people we play in the Big 12, when they play certain teams like Nichols, they're hanging 70-0, 60-0. We need those. Nichols is supposed to be that kind of game for us, and we don't handle business like that. That's what I'm saying. If we're going to be that, and those games count nowadays. It's not about 34, 35, 14. No. You have to blow out, unfortunately, to get the respect nationally, you got to have those games. And I'm not sure we're going to have those games with the rest of the teams that we play. So I just expected a little bit more. I know we will get better. That's our bread and butter, each week getting better. We're a hell of a coaching staff. As we know, we'll get better. But I just expected a little bit more right out of the gate.
I will say on that, going back to last season, obviously we had a very good team. You know, did what they did, got to the
oh, look how many and, got drafted to the NFL.
Yeah,
right?
Many got drafted, you know, but at the end of the season, yeah. You know, everybody played it down, said, oh, we weren't really that good. Personally, like, I wasn't expecting that good of a team as last year. That team was really good. But this Houston game, it's a Big 12. That's a conference game.
Yeah.
Won by 23 points. We didn't do that last year in a conference game. You just got to win. Like, and I'm not saying that Shannon's wrong. I obviously expected a lot better than we put on the field lately. But I will say we did something this past week that we didn't do last year. But look at how last year turned out. Again, it's a very long season. You get better every week. That's the biggest thing with college football is you get better every single week. And as long as we can continue to do that and hopefully have some things fall in our favor now that we have one loss, I think we can still end up where we want to be at the end of the season. But I'm not saying Shannon's wrong by any means. I was just saying we did something last week that we didn't do last year.
That's a good point. Chuck, let's get you in on this. What did you think about this game against Houston?
I thought that last weekend's game told me a lot more about Houston than it told me about TCU. Houston, and it sounds funny for me to say this, but Houston is going to need to adjust to the rigors of the week-in, week-out Big 12 schedule.
Yeah.
You heard that before?
Yeah, maybe once.
With us, I think it's just it's a weekly audition going forward. I want to see more, faster, like Shannon's talking about. But weekly progression, and not just positional progression, but programmatic across the board improvement. I'm looking forward to seeing which version of the 2023 TCU team shows up on Saturday. Because SMU is going to come in and they're going to punch us in the mouth.
Yeah.
And the last time somebody came into Eamon Carter and punched us in the mouth, we didn't react quickly enough. So I'm looking forward to seeing faster reaction this Saturday.
Yeah, I think we would all love to see that out of the team, right? And to your point, Nathan, you mentioned this at the beginning of your comments. We went down opening series, scored. When was the last time that we had done that? I mean, we didn't do that against Colorado. I don't think we did that against Nicholls State. Mm-hmm. So that's a good sign. That's something that absolutely, to Chuck's point, that absolutely has to be something we do on Saturday.
This game also told me a lot about Big 12 refs this season.
So I'm surprised to hear you have a comment about the refs. What did it tell you?
They're terrible. They do not know what they're doing. They don't know what holding is. They don't know what pass interference is. They don't know what a face mask is on a kicker going down the field. Like, we shouldn't have given up that long run for the kickoff for the touchdown. But at the same time, you can't hold the kicker's face mask and arm while he's running past them. And the commentators are like, oh, yeah, he let him go in time. It's still a face mask. Like, it happened. I watched it happen. And somehow the refs missed it. But the Wiley call was just – I don't even know what to say to that.
I have no words to just how poor that non-call was.
Coach Dykes reamed the refs. They went into a timeout later that drive, like 5 minutes, 10 minutes later, went into a timeout, and Coach Dykes was still getting the refs face, like yelling at him.
Oh, I love hearing that. Terrible. Yeah, that definitely did not come across on the TV, I'll have to say. So, well, you know, TCU winning in Houston, you're right, it's the first step of the Big 12. It's definitely one game closer to at least this team's ultimate goal of winning the Big 12. And Chuck, you know, you've seen a lot of long seasons where things kind of started off on the wrong foot.
Mm-hmm. Too many.
Yeah. So in this case, though, how do you think this team is reacting now that we're 2 weeks removed from that loss to Colorado?
I think the team is probably reacting how a team is supposed to react. The one that's more fun to watch is the fan base, because our fan base, it's fickle. It's confused sometimes. Last year, we went to the national championship game, and TCU fans want to do that every year now. And so we do get a little bit impatient. We want to see that excellence week after week after week. So I think this is just a new team with a lot of new faces. And like I said, there's been progression. I want to see which team rolls out there this Saturday.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Skillet game, Fort Worth, second to last one in the series for the foreseeable future. There's always a chance that this series will pick back up again in the, you know, at some point in time, but certainly not in the next several years. Mm-hmm. And Shannon's right. SMU comes in here every single year and wants to play TCU like it's their Super Bowl. It's their bowl game. And for many years, it really was their only, quote, bowl game that they would actually ever be able to see. So, Chuck, you know, you've faced off against SMU many times. You've seen the games that in the last recent years. How do you feel that this team, or what do you think that this team needs to do in order to win this game?
What I would like to see is for us to come out and establish the tone right out of the gates. And
real quick on that, if we win the coin toss, do you want us to defer or do you want us to get the ball?
Oh, I'd go ahead and defer because I think the defense can set a tone as well.
You know, we haven't won a coin toss. That's right. Nathan just reminded me. We have not won one.
And I think it would be wonderful to start the game with a three and out, make them punt, we get on offense. And then Shannon, you as a former defensive player, you know there's one way you feel if the opposing offense hits you with a quick strike, because you go back to the sidelines and you say, oh man, we had a broken assignment, you know, busted coverage. There's a reason why that happened. But if we can go out and put together a soul-sucking, 8-minute-long, grind it out, run it down their throat, that's a different story. Yeah. That makes you question yourself as a defender. You're like, oh, crap. You know, we're in for a long, long day, and it gets a little hotter. And so I would love to see that.
I think that would be an amazing opening. If we were to write a script to this game, I think that would be the amazing opening. And Shannon, you know, as a defensive player, how do you feel that this defense stacks up against SMU in this game?
Well, this is what I'll say. Again, it's no secret that I'm not a big fan of the 3-3 stack. It is what it is. But this game is going to, for me, tell me a lot about the rest of the season. Because this game, it didn't mean anything. But for us, as fans, as a quote-unquote rivalry game, when you have something on the line, which we do, we have the skillet on the line. So there's something on the line. We've got to come out to me and play the best game yet thus far. We need to dominate for 4 straight quarters, because that's the goal. That's always the goal, to dominate each quarter. But I want to see us play on a level to where there's no fallback. Like, every quarter we dominated you. Like, we owned you, and there was no ifs, ands, and buts about it. No falling off, no, you know, 3 points to 0 in that quarter. I mean, we want to dominate them. I just want to see the level of intensity, passion, excited. I just want to see what they're going to – I want to see this team, because there's something on the line. And I know Coach, with him being across the street for those years of beating us, the skillet's on the line, they're going to want to beat his butt. They want Sonny. You know, they do, okay? They're going to be fired up coming in here. So, for me, this is going to tell a lot about what type of team we have for the rest of the season.
Well, I think it's interesting, too, from a defensive standpoint, because SMU – from a stat perspective, they don't have much of a running game this season.
No.
And as much as, and I agree, a lot of the fans don't really like the way that the 3-3 is kind of, you know, shaping up at the moment. But you can't deny it's been really solid against the run this particular season.
It's been very solid. My issue is once we get tired, or once there's – if you strategize against it, find the holes, and it leaves a lot of holes. That's the best way I can put it. It leaves a lot of holes, and now we're playing checkers or chess. You know, one's playing one plays the other. And if they find out the holes, that's when we're not successful. Or if we're not getting consistent pressure, as we talked about on the quarterback, it just is what it is. You can find the holes. When you're only rushing 3, and there's holes right there. You can gash for 4 to 5 yards a piece. Now, you have to have the system. There's got to be the players. SMU don't have that. So guess what? They have a smart quarterback. So now you have to come at them and make him throw underneath the linebackers, or right over the linebackers, I should say, because they're going to bring pressure.
Right. And, well, and that's part of my question, too. So, I mean, given the fact that SMU hasn't really been able to establish much of a run game this season, do you feel that this set that we're going to have on Saturday is going to bring a lot more pressure early and often?
Got to. Shut him down right now, because he has no run game. So if you have no run game, we eliminate the run. Now you can play more zone, or you can really play one-on-one, bring pressure at them. So it just depends on how they want to play it. But if you bring a pressure, you got the 3-3, I would bring everybody. I'd bring both linebackers. They have, you know, at least third quarter, every third down, I'm bringing somebody. Because we can get them off the field right now, to your point, three and out. You got to bring them. So you go zone, zone, man, get them off the field. I think that's going to be the best way. Again, the running, it's known they don't have a running game. So for us, that's done. We're shutting that down. So now we got to stop on the back end.
Yeah, I think that would be the smart play. And I'm hoping that's how the defense is going to be set
it's
up.
It's simple, right?
Yeah,
you don't
absolutely
have to worry about the run, so keep it simple. No.
Yeah, and you really don't with SMU. And, Nathan, you know, on the offensive side, talking about the run game, Bailey obviously had a huge game in Houston. How do you feel that both the offensive line and the run game is shaping up at this point for the offense?
I think they're doing the same thing that they do every year. I am a big proponent of the fact that TCU has had a good running back room for years. Yeah. Like it's not talked about ever. You know, obviously we had LT. You know, back when I first started, you know, we had you know, Kyle, BJ, Trey, Johnson, then we had Jet, Shea Woe, last year Kendre, Amari, like yeah, we've always had a good running back room, and so I think that it's doing what it does every year. It starts to establish a dominance. Coming back to what Shannon was saying, I agree. I think that this, and we say it every week because every week's important, but this is our most important game to me so far because, yeah, you know, Colorado was a very hyped game, so I wanted to see how they responded to hype games. But this is a game that I want to see how they respond to something that means something to you.
Right.
Because when I was in school, you didn't lose to SMU. You just didn't do it. Like, I'm undefeated against SMU.
It was a Nickel State-style game.
Yes, like, yeah, you didn't lose to SMU. If it was a close game, you were disappointed. Like, there was no coming away from that game happy, because if you did your job, you're like, all right, cool, whatever. If you lost, then you were obviously upset. I was undefeated against SMU. Even going back to high school, I played there senior year, and we won against Longview. So you don't lose at SMU, you don't lose to SMU, whatever it is, just because it's a high school stadium. We can get into that later, but
more like a junior high school stadium.
Sorry, I can't wait till Clemson goes in there.
I think Houston's more of a high school stadium.
Yes, but anyway, sorry. But this game is important because you want to show that it means something, and the best way to show that it means something is, like Shannon said, come out, punch somebody in the mouth, and you do that with the run game. Running the ball is a mentality. It's I'm gonna line up like I'm running the football. You're gonna know I'm running the football. And I'm still going to run the football. And you're going to have to stop me. You're going to put a hat on a hat, and whoever wins, wins. So that's where I think that our run game has been the most important thing in the years that we've played, is it's just established our dominance. And going back to last year, it's how we controlled the game. And later in the game, our running backs would just go off because the teams just couldn't keep up with it anymore.
Yeah, and Chuck, to your point, you said, you know, soul-crushing drive, right? That's what we need to put together. And I think this offensive line can certainly deliver that. And I think that this is going to be one of those kind of games where TCU does kind of line up and immediately kind of says, hey, we're going to run it down your throats, and you got to stop us. And I think that we'll have success if we run the ball a lot. Going back into this real quick, actually, you know what? We're running a little long on time. How about we go ahead and get done with predictions? So, Chuck, let's start with you. So, SMU-TCU – give us what you think the final score is going to be in this game.
Call me crazy. I think it's going to be low scoring. I think
low?
I think SMU's got a pretty decent defense. They've got some portal kids. They've got a pretty decent defensive line. I want to establish the run. I'm eager to see us establish the run. Let's go 21-17.
Wow, that is low, 21-17. That would be the least amount of points we've scored all season long. But you know what? It is SMU. Weirder things have happened. Shannon,
you can edit that
out
later if it doesn't happen like that.
Sorry, this is going live tomorrow, so that ain't happening.
I think we're going to put up – I think we're putting up points. I think we're getting to where – again, I hope it's that game where we're getting comfortable. The quarterback is getting comfortable. So I think he'll put up, you know, 37, 40 points, somewhere in there. I know we're capable of that. I give SMU, just because of what the weekend's going to be, and you can't take them light. I give them 21 points. So 37, 21, somewhere in there.
37 to 21. All right, Nathan?
I unfortunately am going with a close game.
Seems to be a trend.
Yeah. I like happy surprises, not bad surprises. So when they would blow them out, it's a happy surprise. But no, I think the offense has been doing well. I think because it's the rivalry game, because, you know, Coach Dykes, he knows this quarterback. I think he's going to do pretty well in preparing him, but they're still going to hit some blows. I think it's going to be 34-31 TCU. So a real close game. I think the biggest difference in this will be special teams. There's going to be a special teams play, or it's going to be the turnover battle that determines this game.
Yeah, hopefully it's not like special teams like last week.
We're not that good at special teams.
We were good the first game, the first two games. But
you're only good as your last game, so what are we talking about here?
You call the face mask, and I don't think we're necessarily as upset with the special teams, right?
I also blame the refs for that short punt, short field goal that they almost took back for a touchdown. I blame the refs for that because they were yelling, "All right, we're done," as the kicker would kick it. And so as a player, you're like, "Oh, we're done." It's like, whatever. So you stop, and then that's why they got down the field so quick. But that's my rant again on the refs. But I think this game will come down to special teams.
Well, that is a really close prediction.
I know, I'm scared.
I mean, I'm going to have to bring my Tums to this game if it comes down to 34-31. For me, I agree with Chuck that SMU has a good defense, but I think, to Shannon's point, I think we've got enough players on the offensive side, and now seeing what Morris was able to do last week and hearing that he's going to be incorporating more of those things into his gameplay, I have a feeling that SMU is going to have to claw their way back into this game. But I think TCU is going to put it out. By the time we get halfway through the third quarter, I think it's going to be one of those kind of games where it's like, okay, it's over.
Right.
It's done. Final nail in the coffin. I'm going to say TCU 42, SMU 24.
Love it. Love it.
Okay. I know. I going out on a limb here, right?
I appreciate it.
I like my game, too. I just hope it materializes on Saturday. We'll see how that goes. Well, Chuck, again, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Buddy.
Really appreciate that. Thank you. We'll definitely have Chuck on at a later date because I want to dive a little bit deeper into that cricket game because that's a good one.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'll bring Mike up here,
for
too.
Sure.
Definitely. 100%. So, thank you, everybody, who showed up to the poop deck tonight. We really appreciate it. And, of course, you can find Killer Frogs online. Go to killerfrogs.com. You can also find us on the Fan Nation on Sports Illustrated. And, of course, we are on every single social media network. Well, thank you all very much for joining us tonight. We have come to the end of the podcast. It's the time where we all get our frogs up, and we get to say,
Go Frogs!
Thank you, and good night.